Today I'm going to talk a little bit about fear. Fear is 100% what holds us back as people. It makes us not do the things that we want to do in this life. We have to be able to do things even though we are afraid to do them. That is key. Knowing that, however, does not solve the issue of the fear itself. When you want to do something in life and you're too afraid to do it, that is very hard to overcome. So, I'm going to get into a little bit of how I've overcome fear in the past, and maybe it will help you be able to overcome fear in your present and in your future. So, I think part of it is just acknowledging where you are and who you are and what you are afraid of and what you aren't afraid of. I think a lot of us can be delusional for a period of time where we think that we are not afraid. Like it is the first step, of course, to solving any issue is identifying the problem. So you have to admit first that you are afraid. And if you are not able to do that, then that's a problem to begin with, right? You need to be able to overcome the fear of even acknowledging your fear. And solving your fear and working through your fear, these are all just these are huge things that you have to take small steps towards. It's just moving in that direction. It's just when you notice that you're afraid, and that's another thing that we can get into is if it's hard to even acknowledge that you're afraid sometimes, what are some of the ways that you can find out and figure out that you are afraid? I think that, we have a physical response to fear, right? We have, it can manifest itself in a very big way by us physically shaking, by us withdrawing, wanting to run away, trying to get away from the fear. And I think another thing that we should acknowledge that it maybe is a little more subtle is when we have stress in our life. We can recognize sometimes that that stress is caused by something that we fear doing. And that, stress is very interesting because stress is this big umbrella term that can be defined in ways of basically in generality, right? It can be defined as a physical symptom. It can be defined as a kind of a mental stress happening to your mind. You're feeling overwhelmed. There's all these other kind of descriptive words that you can get to describe stress. But one of the reasons that you could be stressed is fear. So instead of having to actually acknowledge, or if you're not able to acknowledge what you're afraid of right away, if you notice yourself becoming stressed, maybe it is time to reflect on why you are stressed and what it is within that stressful thing going on in your life that that you are afraid of, right? A lot of times stress is fear is caused by fear of unknowns, right? It's fear of, I get stressed by the craziest things. I get stressed by having to make a phone call that about something that I'm not sure about, right? Yesterday I had a call about ordering concrete, and it's like I don't know shit about concrete. I didn't know, like, we're ordering such a small amount that I didn't even know if they would be interested in delivering such a small amount. And it's like before even making this call, I'm so afraid of making mistakes, basically, of saying something stupid, of appearing as somebody who doesn't know something when I should know something. But in reality, how should I know that? Like, I don't know it. I have to have that conversation to begin to understand. And by the end of the conversation, I did know that they would deliver smaller amounts. I did know that we'd be able to use a conveyor instead of having to wheelbarrow it. All these uncertainties, all these stresses that I was worried about, the essence behind worry in a lot of cases is fear. It's fear of some unknown event. So, I think that when we are stressed, It's easy to become aware of stress. I mean, I say easy in my own life. But sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it's, and for the individual, sometimes you can be completely stressed out for time and time and not even realize it, right? You can become immune to your level of stress. You can think that it's normal to have the level of stress that you have when it's not. And when it's actually detrimental to your life, and when there's underlying problems that need addressed, right? And that fear is an underlying problem of stress. That's what I'm trying to get at. So if you're stressed, if you can become aware of that, and how do you become aware of that? Well, if you're worrying, right? If you're like, what does stress look like to you? Stress, when it's undealt with, can come out as a physical thing. Like, you can develop rashes, you can develop pains in your body. That's something that happens to me. I get physically pained. I start to crave things that I'm slightly addicted to. I start to give in to those cravings. You know, I always have cravings, but I start to give in to those cravings because I'm too stressed to fight it, basically. Stress takes away your energy. You know, it takes away your ability to handle life. And sometimes there isn't an easy way to deal with that stress. But once you recognize that you're stressed, you can start to actually pick apart the points that make up that stress. So that's something that I do. When I realize that I'm stressed, I purposefully, and this is just what works for me, but I take myself away from others, distractions, and I seclude myself completely for, it can be as short as a minute, 30 seconds even, 10 seconds even. It can be a very, very short amount of time, but I need that real alone reflective time with some amount of clarity and ability to actually focus on what is internally going on in my head. Sometimes it takes longer than that too. Sometimes, but usually it only takes longer than that because I'm not actually giving myself the time of day. I'm not actually giving myself the dedicated energy. Maybe I have a podcast in one ear. Maybe I'm still have my phone I'm scrolling on. Maybe I'm just alone, but still thinking about something else, still not being like, okay, you know, you have to have that internal dialogue where you're in control, as opposed to the thoughts coming into your mind, the stressful worry, anxiety thoughts, the fears coming into your mind, which they'll come in because you're in a state of stress and because you have problems in your life. Instead of allowing those to run your brain and to run your thought process, you have to say in your mind consciously, okay, tell me what is actually wrong. And you will immediately get a response. You begin to have an internal dialogue with yourself because there's a subconscious part of you that thinks without your permission. It thinks on demand. It automatically just goes. Your brain is so active all the time. But when you ask it a question, it will answer. And it might not know the answer right away, but it might know something. It will give you something. And you work your way through whatever it gives you. So you got to be coming at it with compassion and logic and understanding, right? Compassion is intrinsic to understanding. You cannot really understand something truly, in my definition of understanding, without a feeling of compassion behind it. You can get something, but to understand it, you have to feel how the other person feels. And in this case, it's your subconscious self. So this internal dialogue is something that is used in a lot of healing practices. There's even a lot of therapies that will use internal dialogue, and they'll go to certain parts of your internal dialogue, right? There's IFS that basically goes to certain parts of your subconscious that that become to that, that start to make up this this concept of like an inner child. And throughout the years, you know, you might have different selves that you end up talking to, and they're also kind of described as parts. And so there's this concept called parts work, which is when a part comes up, you know, they're also called protectors, protector parts, I guess. So they, like, those are the subconscious parts that come up when you start to ask yourself, when you start to ask your subconscious questions. Those are the things that start to come up and try to protect you, right? And so it's working with them, and it's through compassion that you're able to work with them. If you come at them and say, hey, stop it, you know, if you ask them a question and you say, okay, what is causing me stress, and they say, well, I'm really afraid of, like, it's not going to be this direct, but and this vague, but, well, might be vague, but I'm really afraid of the uncertainty of this event that we're going to. I'm really afraid this might happen. And if you just start going, stop it, don't be afraid of that, you don't need to be afraid of that, who cares, it's nothing, that's not understanding. That it is not coming at it with compassion. That's not addressing it. That's actually just ignoring it. But you've gone, like, if you ask that first question, you've gone into the realm where you're actually communicating with it, and then you're ignoring it. So it's actually more direct. You're actually, like, ignoring it directly. Whereas a lot of times our unconscious, our subconscious, those parts, that is stress, the fear, the anxiety is happening, but we're ignoring it, but not even beginning to acknowledge it. So we're ignoring it right away, and we're ignoring it unconsciously a lot of the times. But if you are consciously aware of it, if you start that dialogue, it's important to be nice to that dialogue. It's important not to push it away, because then it feels like, oh, I did something wrong, and your subconscious is like, oh, I'm wrong, I'm not right, it's not safe for me to share. So when you ask it again, hey, what is going on, it's going to be a little more reluctant. It's going to be a little more hidden. It's going to hide itself in very interesting ways. And it's going to play out in very interesting ways. Because what is undealt with unconsciously and subconsciously within us, it still comes out in this world. It still comes out in your life. And it comes out in very different ways, in different behavior than you probably want to behave, because it's unconscious, because it's pre-programmed, because it is something that happened to you when you're young that left an imprint on you. You know, it's like, man, I don't know, like, it's very interesting, like, because I haven't dived deep enough into this, but for myself, but I was trying to use the example of, you know, my phone anxiety, of how I'm afraid to make a phone call. And it's like, when in the past have I had a phone call that's been bad, right? That's made me feel so anxious to make calls. I don't think that's actually what's making me feel anxious about calls. I don't think I had a bad experience with a phone call that made me do that. I think it's the world that I've created, where there's other ways that feel much more comfortable, because you're not putting yourself on a limb. When you make a call, at least I when I make a call, I want to have all my information, and then you're still taking that information in through audio, and I always have a notepad with me to write down things. I mean, it's a little different if you're phoning a friend or something, or like a, you know, family. But with anything else, I'm very much want to get the facts straight, and it's really easy, and there's some worry for me about, like, writing down the wrong thing, about getting the wrong information, about having to call again and ask the same question or a similar question and trying to get an answer that I didn't get, having to call again. You know, that's a thing that I don't like to do. And you know, it's very interesting, like, other people are not like this, and it's very generational. So I think it's the world around me has actually, I'm blaming the outside world. This is not even an internal problem. But no, of course it is to a degree. But I do think that the external world has created conditions where that is not the most optimal way to communicate. And yet it is still the way that a lot of people choose to communicate in this world. So there's that. And that's just an interesting little tidbit about the world around us. But there can be very simple explanations that are probably, you know, 100% they're from our past, because everything's from our past in our minds. But there can be like a moment in time. There can be kind of an event that happened to you in the past that really dictates how you feel about something today. And those things need to be addressed, and that part of you needs to come to some sort of understanding. And there's a certain way to communicate with those parts. I mean, like I said, with compassion, understanding, curiosity, non-judgmental, right? That's another really good adjective for that, is any sort of judgment upon yourself, because that is a part of you, right? They don't call it parts for nothing. It's a part of you. It is, and it plays out in unconscious ways. So it's good to get to know who we are. You know, there's a lot of us in this world that just go through life accepting who we are. And that would be fucking awesome. It would be very blissful to just not ever think about who you are. But that's not reality. I think it's very few people are actually 100% content with that. People have a lot of internal thought, and sometimes they're aware of that and sometimes they're not. And I think that when people become aware of it to some degree, it's very hard to go back to not being aware of it. You know, it's very hard to just turn that part off fully. It's always going to come up a little bit. You're always going to be like, oh, the reason I acted that way was because of this part of me that is fearful of something. Now, this all kind of comes back. I'm trying to loop this back around to, how do we work through fear? Well, it's addressing that fear. It's recognizing it's a problem. So we've established that. Now, how do we actually go from being afraid of something to not being afraid of it? Well, it's through incremental steps forward. It's through trying. It's through putting yourself in situations that you have a high probability of success in, but situations that you are, that part of you is afraid of. You know, it's about trying, right? And it's about, even when you have, like, for instance, this fear, right? There's a theory called exposure therapy, right? To deal with fear. So if you're afraid of heights, you would expose yourself to some level of heights, very small at first, and you would try to sit in that fear, and you would calm yourself down, and, you know, this is up on a step stool, something like that, something very safe, something very, very logically safe, and there's a part of you that's afraid of it. But you are okay at the end of that experience. You step down. You might have worked through your fear while you're on that height, or while you're doing that experience, or you might still be afraid as you come down from that, or as you leave that experience, or after you finish it. And you do some reflection there as well. You say, okay, I just did that and everything was okay. Everything was fine. And that part is going to come up and be like, whoa, that was so scary. That was so scary. That was so scary. And you recognize that part, and you say to it, as that thought comes to you, yes, it was. Yes, it was. But it's okay. We did it. We're alive. And actually, if you think about it, and you can say things as general as this sometimes, if you think about it, it actually wasn't as bad as we thought it was. Now, you can say that if it's true, but if you say that when it's not true, when you haven't dealt with it, you're actually just dismissing that part of you. So that's very interesting, right? you know, like that part of you, you're basically, you're not, you shouldn't really say that until you actually feel that, right? Like, that's what I'm saying. And that part of you needs to feel that. So you can come down and you can just say, oh, it's okay. It's okay. You can just kind of, everything was fine. Everything was okay. And everything was fine. That's real, right? That's true. And if everything wasn't fine, you can also explain that, you know, in a way where it's like, you know, there needs to be a lot of logic to deal with fear in my mind, because it's, the way we deal with fear is through courage and through understanding. And understanding happens in our brain, right? It happens with awareness. So it's this combination of courage and understanding. And courage is just the willingness to try. If you're not willing to try anything to fix your fears, then you are not courageous at all. So how do we work on building courage? Well, that's where that theory of exposure therapy comes in, right? It's going with what level of courage you have and just building upon that. It's kind of like a muscle, right? When you're building muscle, you're stretching that muscle out into a point, not where it tears completely and you've injured yourself and you can't work out anymore, but where it's stretched and it's having these little micro tears, and then you're giving it nutrients through what you eat, and that all those amino acids, all those proteins, they form themselves into new muscle cells that fill the gaps in those cracks. Right? That's what's happening. It's the same thing with our bones, actually. The way you get strong bones is by having these micro little cracks in them, and then having calcium, zinc, everything else bones need, and actually filling in those bones. And actually, weightlifting is not only good for building muscle, it's good for building bone density and strength as well, because that happens with weightlifting. So we got to weightlift with our fears. We need to start at what level we're at, right? When you push yourself too hard, when you expose yourself too rapidly, you could re-traumatize yourself, right? You could create another situation that reinforces those protective parts that were only activated in a situation that is not conducive to the rest of your life. And you could really set yourself back through exposure therapy as well, if it's not done correctly. So it's through very, very incremental states. It's through trying something that everything that we do, we roll the dice. It's not just going to the casino or the stock market or anything like that. That's not the only time you roll the dice. You know, it's not just craps that you're rolling dice at. It's doing anything. There's always a variable. There's always a level of, will this be successful or won't this be successful? Even driving to the store, you're rolling the dice of a probability that is very low, but there is a probability that you could not make it to the store, that you could get in an accident. Accidents happen, right? Car accidents happen. Everything that you do, even stepping down from a step, going upstairs, eating certain foods, doing anything, you're rolling the dice because there's probabilities of something happening. And I don't mean it as far as death as being the only, you know, there's always a risk of death. I mean, there's risks as well, all sorts of negative outcomes from it. So we have to be aware of those probabilities when we are exposing ourselves to something that we are afraid of. We have to say, what is the probability that this won't turn out well? This small, incremental, courageous act that I am doing. Is the probability that it's not going to be well, is that only 1%? So if I do it 99 times, those 99 times are going to be positive? Or is it more like 20% of the time it's going to be negative? Maybe 20%, I mean, that's maybe too high of a probability. So step back and do something different. that it has a higher probability of success, a higher probability of a positive outcome. Basically, what I'm saying is if your courageous acts were the stock market, invest in the S&P for 10 plus years, because the probability is almost 100% that you'll make money. It's very low probability that you're not going to make money on that. Don't invest in Nikola, Tesla, Palantir, penny stocks. Don't invest in things that have high risk, high rewards. Just invest in small incremental things until you get to a level where you're able to handle the outcome, the negative outcome that might happen from something. I think the other thing that comes up when dealing with our own fear, and this will be for some people and not for everyone, but there's a real easy way of behaving, which is starting to compare yourself to others. You start to think, oh, why did this thing happen to me when I was younger that makes me now afraid of this or that? And you start to be like, that's very unfortunate. I don't like that happened to me. That really sucks. I wish that didn't happen to me. And you can start to compare yourself to others that didn't have that happen. And you start to say, wow, they're so lucky that they never had those experiences and that they don't have the fears that I have. And you can do that. Every single person can do that. If every single person can compare themselves and put themselves in a negative light and put someone else in a positive light, then that comparison is meaningless. If everyone in the world can do it, if there is not a single perfect life that somebody is living, then there is no point to compare, because there's nothing to compare it against. The variables, the understanding, the real and true understanding of how somebody is and what their life is like is impossible to have as another person. We can have basic understandings of the way somebody else lives, and that's what we're comparing ourselves to. If we say, oh, I wish I was a boomer so that I could make a phone call without being anxious about it. Well, then you got the problems of that boomer, right? And there's going to be all sorts of different problems that boomer has, because nobody is perfect. I think there's a saying out there that is, comparison is the thief of joy. But comparison is also a deterrent to courage. Because when you compare, I mean, there's another saying that compare and despair, right? That's another saying. But when you compare, you start to write off your own ability. You start to feel depressed. You start to feel, you know, compare and despair, right? You start to feel depressed. You start to just wish things were different. Because of what else is the reason for comparison? I mean, there can be a positive reason for comparison if you are, for instance, comparing yourself to someone else so that you can understand how they as well worked through what you worked through. What they did, what practical steps they did. And there actually needs to be some sense of inspiration and motivation to be courageous as well. If you don't have a purpose to change the way that you are, you will not change the way you are. You have to have a reason to be courageous, to want change in your life. And sometimes other people's lives and other people's experiences and other people's stories can be those reasons. So that is a good reason to compare. But a lot of times we're comparing other people's lives and we're saying, man, I really wish that I had done that instead of this. I would be in such a different place. I'd be doing something similar to what they're doing. I could be doing what they're doing, but I can't now because I've chosen all these different things in life. And that person might be saying, well, I'm doing this and this is fine, but I sure wish I was doing what that other person was doing, right? Everybody's comparing and despairing and having their joy thieved from them and all the other sayings about comparing that there might be out there. So I think that's the podcast for today, guys. It's a short one. It's about fear. And I only got tripped up a few times by filming myself, so maybe this will be something that I do more frequently. It's just like that little extra bit of work that makes this feel more like a job than to feel like something that I do genuinely because I enjoy it. And it takes, you know, it takes that part out of what I'm doing, right? Like, I want to feel real joy from what I do to make money. I think it's this very easy thing that people do where they're like, oh, I enjoy photography, so I'm going to become a photographer and people will pay me to take pictures of what they want me to take. It's like, when you go and take photography for yourself and you're walking around, it's street photography, landscape photography, hiking photography, even portrait photography, whatever kind of photography you enjoy, it's very hard to make a living, especially at the beginning, by only doing what you enjoy. Somebody else is going to say, hey, do you want to shoot a wedding for me? You're such a good photographer. And you're going to say, well, that's not street photography. That's not journalistic photography. That's not portrait photography. I mean, there's portrait photography in there, but it's many different types of photography. It's its own thing. It's event photography, basically. And you do it for the money and you realize, well, this feels a little different. This feels a little different from what I love about this photography. So that's kind of how I feel about this podcast. It's like, I love doing the audio part of this, but the video feels a little different. Feels like a bit of a show, you know? And I know that the Forrest Stevens Show, I know that's in the title of my podcast name. And, you know, the other part too is that I'm a filmmaker. I know how to do all these things. I know how to make video. But even right now, it's like, I'm not making video look good. Like, this is not something that I care to set up and set lights up and use my best lens and use my best camera. I'm using my phone right now on front facing so I can see it. And I'm making sure that I'm in frame and that, like, this is covered so that it doesn't look like fucking this. You know, so my face isn't completely dark and all the other windows are open. So I did do things to get this looking better than it could have looked, but I didn't put a lot of effort in. I mean, the angle's crap. I don't even have a tripod on this. I just leaned it up against a cup because that's about the amount of effort that I want to do into this. I don't, like, this was even extending myself. Like, the last few podcasts I've done audio only and it feels great. But I realized that that's not the landscape we live in. If I want this to actually have any listeners, if I want this to go anywhere, I'm going to have to do video as well, because it's just how you get, I mean, I just know from my own past, like, I get a lot more views on the videos that have video or the podcasts that have videos. And then that leads to listeners coming over and listening to the audio only, which is basically what I'm doing. It also creates opportunity for clips. And clips can happen in the future. I don't have to worry about clips either. They can happen when I have enough money to hire a producer. And I say, hey, I got lots of work for you because I didn't do shit about clips. So go through all these episodes and clip out some interesting things and make some YouTube shorts, some reels, some, like, I don't know, probably Threads will have, like, reels at this point by the time that these are made into clips. And, you know, post it on Twitter. And I'm not doing any of that shit. I can't stand marketing. It's like it's the worst part about the business that I'm in with filmmaking. It's like, I know that I could be getting a lot more views on the documentaries that I make if I was to share them more, if I was to post clips of them to different social medias. And it's like, I used to do that stuff because I really, really wanted to build a business. And now it's like, I can't be bothered, man. And it's something that I got to figure out. It's something that I need to do. Like, it's basically something I need to hire out because I've got dull eyes. You know, they're a little cloudy compared to when I first started. And they were shiny and bright. And I'm just over that part of the business. Just completely over it. I just want things to be seen if they're good. And I think that's the way things should be. But instead, we, in this world that we're in now, we are obsessed with people who are good at marketing. The reason that all of the Kardashians are so valued by so many people that watch them and care about them is because they're marketers. They're really great at marketing. Their content they create is shit. It's trash. And so much of that is true with so many other people. Basically, every influencer on Instagram, the content that they're actually creating is of very little value. But they're incredibly good at marketing. And so they're praised indirectly for their ability to market. And I don't care to be an advertiser. I don't care to be a marketer. It's not something that I care about very much. I just want to do things that I actually care about. So that's why I've been a little reluctant to do this video podcast, but might as well, I guess, shrugging to do it. Some people can get away with not doing it, but they're kind of legacy, it's basically the only one out there. I mean, there's lots that are out there that have moderate success, but one of the big ones is Marc Maron's WTF. There's no video to that. Tim Ferriss's podcast, no video to that, but they're kind of grandfathered in and they're huge for what they are. They're near the top of their sections. But they've lost market share because of other podcasts that do video. And maybe those podcasts are better in certain ways besides the video that they make, but there is something to be said for people wanting to watch podcasts. I don't get it. But it that's what people do. I listen to them because I listen to them while I do other things. So if you are watching this right now, go subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, give me ratings, give it a 5-star if you liked it, and don't give it a 1-star if you didn't like it, because I want them ratings to be high, brother. So thanks everyone for listening, watching, whatever it is, however you consumed this. A little update on the book. It is still, still packing. There's a U-Haul right next to me. Where I'm at here, we got the trailer out here, we're loading it up today, tomorrow, and the next day, and then I will have a little bit more free time. I mean, basically after we finish packing, I have to finish all the renovations in the house, so there's that, but I have a little more time to focus on this book of mine, which actually I have a little bit of time right now in between. We're not packing till in the evening today, so maybe I'll go do that. Maybe I'll go work on the book right now. The book is called Tripping. There'll be a link in the description if you're listening or watching this later. If you're watching this as it comes out, probably won't be out yet, but stay tuned for it. If you're a present follower, all of your future followers, go check it out. Link in the description. Thanks everyone for watching and listening.